Blackburn and Boa came to Berkshire this week hoping to capitalise on a side broken by a 4-0 defeat, and yet both left empty-handed as Reading stormed up the early championship table with an aggregate score of 4-0, no less. Welcome to the Tarless End Podcast, episode 360, Reading podcast by fans, for fans. I'm delighted to once again be your host this week, Mark Mayo, joining you having had a late dropout last week due to some motorway inconveniences, shall we say, and typical Reading injury crisis form that was. But, well, in the typical Reading sense, back this week and truly back in the game with Dave Handbags Harris to talk with me about two really good wins. How's it going, Handbags?
Yeah, not bad. That's a nice little bit of alliteration there with the three B's. Quite like it.
Well, there's loads. We just get so many teams starting with B as well in this league. Like, as well, I find it quite an odd sort of little quirky fact, isn't it? The Blackpool and, you know, Bristol City and Burnley and all this. Like, I don't know if there's any sort of a, you know, psychological advantage to being higher up the alphabet as a football team. Probably not, but there we go. So yeah, we'll get back onto those games in just a little bit with the recap. We'll have the mailbag coming up later, lots of questions in for us this week, and we'll have pub chat later on with Dave Evans from the Community Trust. He's dropped in to have a little chat about their work. Lots going on, honestly, as a Reading fan. If you haven't really heard of the Community Trust, not really sure what they do, hold on for that, because there's a lot more going on than you might realise, as I certainly found out. And we'll also be previewing a trip to Millwall later on in the show. So let's get on with it then with the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Well, let's start with Blackburn then, Handbags. And I think we all turn up to this game with a little bit of, you know, perhaps pessimism, perhaps a sense of realism, knowing what exactly can happen when you play a team that's good in the championship, when you're perhaps not the best team in the championship. But I think we all kind of had in the back of our minds as well this sense that it is early days and it is the championship, the exact sort of league where a team that's won three games in a row to start the season plays a team that's just been beaten 4-0 on the road, and the team that's won three games in a row gets absolutely turned over. This was a hugely dominant display, wasn't it? And Reading just, it was unusual in the sense that it was first minute to last that it really felt like Reading were totally on top of this one.
Absolutely. I came away from that having initially been in two minds of whether to even turn up or not. I'm so glad I did. Football really is a wonderful sport at times. It can leave you feeling absolutely down in the dumps, but can leave you feeling so high. And given, as you say, what happened on Saturday at Rotherham, you can't really blame fans for, you know, being in two minds to turn up. But we did, and absolute credit must be given to everybody involved and put on those. Well, not the 11 on the pitch, but however, you know, the 11 plus the subs to put on such a display, such a dominant display, an exciting display, and one that, you know, ultimately, deservedly, was a comfortable victory in the end against a team, as you say, that had won their first three games. It was brilliant to see such a really aggressive press come away working for once, and every time we went forward, we looked like scoring. And it was, yeah, it was an absolute joy to behold. It was, you know, what were we worried about?
I know, it all seems so far away, doesn't it? Those woes after Rotherham. But there were two things that really surprised me about this game. Surprise isn't the right word, but certainly caught my attention. And you mentioned one of them there was the pressing game. And Reading teams, I don't think we've really seen Reading teams kind of ever really do much for press, have we? I'm trying to think of the teams that had kind of a clear style. You think of the McDermott teams that did kind of sit back a little bit and hit on the counter, the Yap Stam team that just kept the ball endlessly without really threatening on goal. And I don't know whether this is going to be a huge theme going forward under Paul Ince, but it really worked against Blackburn was this pressing, getting the ball up the pitch and winning it in their own half and creating chances from it. It was really countless the amount of times it happened for Reading that day. And also the other thing is that Shane Long coming back into the team. And I think we all probably had some sort of doubt as to him leading the line, certainly on a long-term basis. And you do have to wonder what's the difference between Shane Long, you know, now and the Shane Long that Reading fans saw over 10 years ago and has been in the Premier League and everything. Physicality, I think, is probably something that maybe running for 90 minutes might be beyond him, although his fitness does seem pretty good still. But the intelligence of his play, the way he absolutely schooled the defender, Phillips, so I know he's only 17 and is highly rated, but he seemed to win every aerial duel against a player who was a foot taller than him. And that was just such a joy to watch, seeing Shane Long come back and be that intelligent footballer, so streetwise that, I mean, obviously he wasn't that in his first spell, but it gives a lot of faith for the, you know, the season ahead with him at the front of the attack.
It does, yeah. That's what ultimately what 12 years in the Premier League does to your play, I mean, regardless of how old you are. He's, you know, we always knew that he's, you know, strong as an ox. And he's relatively quick as well. Obviously, he'll have lost some of his pace. But yeah, you know, a 17-year-old coming in, playing in the Championship, presumably his first few games, against a player that's just played the last 10, 11 years in the Premier League, and was ultimately, you know, didn't score an absolute bucket load of goals, but regardless of that, was absolutely loved wherever he played, particularly Southampton. You know you're getting a quality player. And you know you're able to play that pressing game with him up there because he will just keep running. It's that classic Steve Coppell signing that we've made in some ways. Yes, all right, it's the second time we've signed him, but we know what we're going to be getting. It's just high intensity and intelligence. He looks the part, doesn't he? Which is nice to see.
Well, also, I do think that the kind of double act, I don't know if this, you can really do this for an entire season unless you are, you know, absolutely dominating in all aspects. But if Reading can have Shane Long run defences ragged for 60 minutes, then Lucas Shaw come off the bench for the last 30 and just kind of, as he did with the third goal, just toy with them. And then, you know, he's got all the finishing capabilities and everything that Reading could do with. That's almost a little bit of a too good to be true kind of sentiment. I suppose in a way you want to be using Shaw a bit more than that, don't you?
I think so, yeah. And provided we get the Lucas Shaw, I'm going ahead of myself a little bit here, but provided we get the Lucas Shaw that came on against Blackburn rather than the one that came on against Borough, I wouldn't mind necessarily seeing that. Or perhaps I doubt we'll see it, but, you know, who's to say that we couldn't potentially use him as a front two?
Yeah, the little and large is definitely something to consider. Tom Ince has been kind of playing kind of up front with Shane Long over the last week. Let's talk about Borough then. The first thing that I kind of thought about the Borough game is that it is the beauty of being in the Championship that we had the game against Blackburn, and that sort of thing can happen with a team not doing well against a team top of the league. And then perhaps some would argue the beauty of the Championship is that Tyrese Fawner's goal probably gets ruled out in the Premier League through VAR and a potential very minor infringement of offside. But otherwise, Reading just, you know, a good goal, a really good finish to enjoy. And Fawner's growing into his position in this team, isn't he? He was always going to take a little bit of time to get ready for the Championship, never played at this level before, but just generally speaking, I think he's showing signs now of getting towards the player that I think Forest fans really believe he can be.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, he's growing into it. I thought Loom alongside him, both complemented each other extremely well. Against Borough, Loom gave the ball away a bit sloppily at times, which was the other way around against Blackburn. Again, it was a little bit sloppy, but it's got potential, that midfield pairing with Jeff Hendrick as well. And again, on Saturday, you know, Hendrick, some people were saying that he didn't have the best game. Again, against Blackburn, didn't have the best game, but he makes these driving runs forward, and he must have made half a dozen runs forward where he wasn't picked out when he would have been onside with a decent ball through, and he just wasn't seen. It's got to be a little bit frustrating, but I do like what I see with Hendrick. And again, he's a player whose knowledge and experience in the Championship obviously is unquestioned with his history here with Burnley. So that midfield trio is starting to show signs of being a good, solid unit, and it's promising. The key thing is obviously just keeping them fit, I suppose, which has been a problem over the last few seasons. But we did get an explanation, we thought, from Paul Ince, Alex Ray, and Mark Bowen at the fans forum. which kind of went some way to explaining why. And it makes sense, given the propensity for Paunovic in particular to do training predominantly with the ball work and neglecting any conditioning training. You know, players weren't doing their weights, and we're ending up with soft tissue injuries. And now the soft tissue injuries that we're seeing now is the scar tissue that's being put under too much stress, I suppose. So that kind of explains that. Hopefully over the coming season or two, we'll have a much fitter squad with fewer injuries, but time will tell.
Yeah, I did see something the other day, Paul Ince, saying that they've introduced yoga and stuff like that into the pre-match routine. And I was sat there thinking, how is that only just coming in? That's been something that I've heard footballers doing for 20 years plus, sort of thing. It feels that even I know that, and I have no level of education in these kind of things. So Reading, yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's with the injuries, it is a case of kind of learning from past mistakes. And so long as that does happen, then there can only be improvements. I think the fear for me with the midfield trio, and I guess with just generally Reading's form this week, is that we have seen these kind of dawns before. What's the problem has been that teams have kind of worked out how to cure those kind of dawns that we've had. And then we've not had a plan B, or we've not been able to evolve and progress ourselves. So that's something to think about, as particularly we're going to away at Millwall and Sheffield United next. Very, very difficult games, different kind of atmospheres than we'd have had. And Borough, I guess the only other thing I'd say about the Borough game is that we were really backed against the wall towards the end. And to see Reading come through with a tight win, as well as the kind of luxurious 3-0 win that we had in the week, those are different kind of mentalities. And it's good to see Reading kind of pull through with that.
It was. And that was the pleasing thing you mentioned, that we've not had a plan B so much over the last few years. But we played Blackburn, we played Borough, come away with 6 points, but they were very, very different performances. We sacrificed a lot of possession and territory against Borough, knowing that they would have a lot of the ball, sat in, got the goal, and which gave us something to hold on to. It was a very defensive performance, and we're certainly not going to play like that in every single game. But that's the thing, with every single game we're setting up in a different way, and that's going to keep opposition teams guessing. Yes, all right, the formation is generally the same with the back three, and you know, it's exciting to watch. It wasn't pretty on Saturday, but it did the job. And up until the point that Sam Hutchinson went off, we were very, very solid. Borough very rarely had a sniff, if and didn't create anything at all, really, of note. And that's no slight on the guys that came on after Hutchison went off. But that for me demonstrated just why Hutchison was the man of the match, because he marshalled that defence so well. It was only after that that Borough really started creating any chances. They had a header and they had the block, and that was a brilliant block from Clark. And who hasn't looked out of place so far, incidentally, in his few minutes that when he's come on. Yeah, it's pleasing that we can actually grind wins out and play within a formation, a set sort of formation structure, and set up differently to counteract opposition strengths, and effectively come away with the 3 points. And we've done it 3 times this season, and it's pleasing. So it stands us in good stead. But as you say, we've had these false dawns in the past before, and it's. Yeah, that does worry us, but momentum is something in the Championship, and those two wins, I cannot think of another performance in the last 5 years or sequence of performances in the last 5 years where we're going into a game with so much confidence after having taken such an abject pummeling at Rotherham. It's phenomenal the way that it's just turned around on a sixpence. And that goes to show, I think, to an extent, the characters that we now have in the squad, and perhaps a degree of weak mentality that we've had in the players over the last few years. Suddenly we've got a couple of experienced players, leaders in Jeff Hendrick, in Sam Hutchinson, who, all right, he only played the one game so far, in Shane Long. You know, these are guys who you would think and you would hope have standards, and that's rubbing itself off on the rest of the squad.
Yeah, I think anyone who watched the pre-season games as well, featuring John Clark and Hutchinson, definitely saw that there was a you know, a couple of players in there that Reading can do something with, completely opposite ends of their careers and everything. And but certainly John Clark coming from Port Vale probably wasn't someone that we expected much of this year, but very promising early signs. Let's talk, you know, let's round off this recap then with a little chat about our early impressions of the Championship as a whole. It's kind of a little bit of a sacrilege to look at the table right now, but Reading are doing all right. I think the old adage is 10 games as to when you actually think that there's a table to make sense of in there. But the Championship in itself at the moment, I mean, there's a couple of stats here that I've looked at that can guide us as to what is happening at the moment in the league as a whole. 2020, 2021 and 21-22, the last two seasons, both had two teams at this stage with records of 4 wins, a draw and no defeats. There were 3 teams unbeaten as well in both of those last 2 years at this time. Now, there are no teams this year who have 4 wins at this stage. There are 3 teams that were unbeaten, however. They're placed 2nd, 9th and 14th because Preston have 1 win, 4 draws. Preston, incidentally, have also scored 1 goal and conceded none in 5 games, which is really interesting. Wigan, who have played a game less, I think they're 1-3-0. Only 10 of 24 teams have won over 1 game. Take, for example, League One. That's 14 of 24 teams have won over 1 game. So it feels like a really tight Championship at the moment. That doesn't mean that teams like Norwich or Sheffield United aren't going to burst out. But a league where every team is beating everyone and kind of classic Championship sense of teams drawing all the time, that definitely suits Reading, I think, this year.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Ultimately, you're going to get the teams who have resources up at the top end. I think Watford are going to be up there towards the season's end. Sheffield United look like they're going to be strong again. You know, with the squad we've got, I don't think, you know, and based on what I've seen so far, I don't think we'll be in any danger of relegation. It all remains on fitness, and if we can keep Lucas Schau scoring, of course, that always gives you a chance. But there's no generally outstanding team in this division. Now, a lot of people will turn around and say, "Oh, it's a rubbish division." But you get that every single year. You know, people saying that it's not a rubbish division. It's just that teams are generally really well matched, and any team can literally beat each other. You know, you saw last season Fulham scoring absolutely hatfuls of goals, and yet they lost what, seven, eight games, something like that. You know, because teams can beat anybody else. It's, you know, and one of those games that obviously was lost to us. So it's that kind of division, and momentum plays a hell of a part in it. If you go on a little run, sort of 5 or 6 games unbeaten, then who knows what can happen? You've just got to keep consistently getting the results, and you know, you end up in the upper echelons of the table, fighting for the good stuff rather than the bad stuff.
Definitely, that's the game for Reading this year. Just as a final point on that, 3 of the top 6 last season were there after 5 games already. And also this stage last season, Reading had 1 win and 4 defeats and the worst defensive record by miles. So we have, without a doubt, improved, which I think we're all very pleased to see. Let's hear from Paul Ince then, and then we'll go into the mailbag to hear what you're saying on the social medias.
No, but don't worry. The 3 points don't matter. I hate when people keep saying the massive 3 points. It was a massive performance. All right, it was a massive performance. Whether you win, lose or draw the game, performance was as much as Wednesday was amazing and how we pressed. Today was just as amazing because we were out on our feet. All right, it was out on our feet. As I said, we talk about a Fedbear squad. You know, it's really tough at this moment of time, and for them to put in that shift again as I say, I'm just so proud of them. Even if Millers have put a lot of pressure, they're a good team. They spent a lot of money this year. You know, so they're going to put pressure on. They started being a big bloke on, started going longer. And because we were so tired, we just kind of just kept... Subconsciously, it's hard when you're tired. When you're at your feet, you just go back. But we kept our shape. And listen, they were going to have a couple of chances. But ultimately, I thought we were unbelievable. And I've just said to the lads in there, listen, you know, some games are ugly, some games you win ugly. I said, but I don't care if you lost or won or drawn today. I said, the matter is just the togetherness, the spirit, the will, you know what I mean, to hold on, you know, another clean sheet, which is always important. So, yeah, I'm quite pleased today.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Right then, let's get into some mailbag. You can always send in your questions via the Twitter and the Facebook and the email, which is thetirelessend@gmail.com. Twitter call out, as per usual, the most popular route for people to get their thoughts in. Maze has responded this week saying, can we expect to push for a top half finish or maybe even a cheeky playoff push if we're able to capitalise on the early form? I think we've kind of got into that already as to how it is kind of early days still, and we'll learn a lot about the club in the next week or so. Send also of those loan options we have, who would you want to try and make permanent already? Who could we realistically get? That's Loom, Lumley, Fauna, and Hendrick at the moment. Just a kind of one of those at the moment, the one that's impressed you most. I think that it's very early days with someone like Loom. I mean, Fauna, realistically, I don't think we could get without something like Motion or maybe even Forest staying up or something like that. But I think that there's an early case for Jeff Hendrick to be around a bit longer. But I think, generally speaking, on those late loan players, I think it's all just quite early days, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. You've got to give it 3-4 months before you can make any kind of decision. I mean, let's face it. After about a dozen games last season, everybody was saying Danny Drinkwater wasn't particularly great. And then the second half of the season really came good. So, and he's without a club. I wouldn't be surprised if he was knocking on our door at some point, if we could afford him, of course. But no, it is early days. But you know, the signs are very promising, as we've mentioned with Loom and Fauna, and all three of them. We've mentioned the midfield trio so far. It's who's to say? Who's to say what could happen? But if we have any chance of signing Loom, I wouldn't be averse to signing him based on what I've seen so far. He's the one real standout, but of course he's playing. He's at Porto, so he's not going to come cheap. They'll see the English club and see the pound signs, and you know, screw our financial position, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, to be honest, they won't see many pound signs if they look at us very hard. So, Benjamin Vickers saying, have we stepped up our game in the last few weeks because Dai Young is over? What influence has the Queen of Brunei had on our defence? Well, this has been one of the interesting things that as we were leaving the game against Blackburn, my mate said, as someone who looks like the owner of us, quite a few people, you know, didn't want to sound rude, but did notice a few kind of Chinese or Asian people were hanging around in the posh car park outside the hotel. And I didn't really think anything of it until we got home and realised that it was indeed Dai Young, Queen of Brunei and co. in the town, stuck around for both the home games. It's been a nice little add-on. And actually, I was kind of refreshed by the fact there wasn't a huge fanfare about it. Dai Young isn't a huge fanfare kind of guy, from what I can tell. And John Medeski used to bring quite a few interesting faces along with him. I think the Queen of Brunei wasn't quite at that level, though, was he?
Didn't sound like it, no. But he did have Kate Middleton's parents at a couple of games, didn't he? Would they have affected the performance? No, absolutely not. Paul Ince, Alex Ray, they've got a bunch of professionals in there who just want to go and play as best they possibly can. And the fact that the owner and she was there, they won't have had any bearing whatsoever on the match.
Nah, I think it's just nice to see that he's still interested, isn't it? I suppose it's that's the big worry for a lot of Reading fans. Not something I'm too concerned about myself, about his interest still in the club. But it's good to see him get over. Like to see it more, but as I say, I'm not too fussed with being a big kind of fanfare, coming waving a flag on the pitch or anything, which I don't think he would do anyway. Loyal Royal is the next to tweet us in with a thought on the Boa match, saying, anyone else think the ref gave them a penalty? My heart was in my mouth. Then the assistant referee flagged offside. Shane Long was outstanding. One move in the first half when he came out with the ball down the left in particular. Clark Block was memorable. Whole team heroes also love to see at Club 1871 singing and time wasting with the ball. Elvis Royal asking, why are we so amazing? Dave DLR has tweeted a sense as well, saying, is Paul Ince the first Reading manager in a long time to change his tactics to suit the opponent and fitness level of his team? Now, that's an interesting point as well, because we did mention the changing of the tactics in the first part of the show, but the fitness level of his team and just telling his team for the last stage at Boa game just to sit in instead of going and chasing the game. If he's responding, doing that to respond to his the fitness levels of his team, that again is just a very intuitive way that Paul Ince is managing the team.
I think so, yeah. I think there's a lot to be said for the approach that we took, not just because of the way Boa play, But also the fact that we did have an extremely exhausting, high pressing game, intense game on Wednesday. And you know, normally we play on a Tuesday. We didn't have that extra day. Players would have had a day off presumably would have had a day off, or at the very least a very light training session on the Thursday. So there wasn't a lot of recovery time between, you know, it was only less than 3 days recovery time. So you know, we can't go, you know, going gung ho, you know, all intensity in every single game at this level. Particularly with our thin squad, we don't have a huge amount of experience on the bench. So I'm quite pleased to see it. It demonstrates a degree of intelligence and thoughtfulness and player preservation. He's obviously very, very, very aware of the injury problems that we've had. And so I think it's quite sensible to do that. It is the first manager in a long time that we've had to set up the team in such a way. It is partly out of necessity, but certainly I think the last manager that we had that did that, I think, was probably Steve Clarke. Not too many managers did do that. So two varying degrees of success.
Yeah, I'm certainly very happy to see it. And it's, I mean, ultimately someone like Paul Lynch probably isn't going to tactically mastermind you to kind of 100 points in this league, but he's got a lot of experience, a lot of know-how in the game and everything. He can respond to his play as well. And if he can use those pragmatic skills as his management, kind of CV, his forte, then all the better, I think. Alistair tweeting us in this week saying, Buzanis or Lumley in goal for Millwall? Dean Buzanis came in for his Reading Championship debut on the weekend because Joe Lumley couldn't play against Middlesbrough. Joe Lumley, who did pull off a very good save to keep Blackburn at bay to kind of bounce back from that Rotherham game. Both of them ultimately kept clean sheets, though. Lumley's back and eligible for Millwall. So does he come in handbags, or do we stick with the guy who kind of only really came in as a default?
I'm a firm believer of, if you've got the shirt, you keep it until otherwise. Buzanis came in, did absolutely nothing wrong. Yes, his distribution could be better, but I did like the fact that, you know, for once we weren't playing around at the back. He was just getting hold of the ball and absolutely wellying it up the pitch. Absolutely love to see that. Good old school goalkeeping. He's got the shirt. He did nothing wrong against Middlesbrough, as far as I'm concerned. It would have done him a whole world of good. And as far as I'm concerned, he stays in until he's injured or he starts pulling off multiple clangers.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it will be Lumley. I think that's who Ince is going to go back to. But I mean, I suppose in a way, I don't really mind. Like, I probably would go Lumley because he did play well against Blackburn. And, you know, if you're going to keep him on a short leash, then fair enough. And maybe only give him, you know, another game of errors, as it were, before bringing Buzanis in. Thinking long term, obviously, Buzanis is the guy with the contract to be permanently here rather than just a loan. Although it wouldn't surprise me if there was a deal to keep Lumley longer than just this season. So, yeah, I probably would go with Lumley just because that Blackburn performance was decent again. But I guess we're in a nice position that we're both now have the experience of keeping a clean sheet in the Championship. We can trust both to varying degrees. I know a lot of people don't quite trust Lumley yet. Richie Royal, go on, sir.
Just on that point. I mean, it's not as though we've been. I can think of a few keepers that we've had in the past that who we know have got absolute clangers in them, and yet we seem to have accepted it. And yet, with I'm just thinking immediately off the top of my head, Ali Al-Absi. We know what he was like, but he was loved by the fans because he was a genuinely decent bloke. And some of his athleticism and his saves were phenomenal. But you know, Joe Lumley is going to be, you know, pretty much in the same boat as far as I'm concerned. We know he's going to have a clanger in him, and we just got to accept that if he does play, that might happen.
Federici as well, Adam Federici, particularly when he first came into the team, was really one, wasn't he? It's quite remarkable. I remember looking back on it, but it was the thing that, in my mind at least, just defined him, and obviously probably did come to define him in his Reading career later down the line with the FA Cup semi-final, sadly. But yeah, obviously a great goalkeeper that we all loved at the club, and rightly so. Richie Rawl then saying, does Ajaria get back in this team when he's fit? I mean, pretty straight up answer for this for me is no.
I saw this question and it didn't really take a lot of thought to answer it, did it? No, he's on the bench and he comes on to change a game if it's not going right.
And I think that would suit him. I think he's actually someone who should benefit as a bit of a role of a, as a super sub and see if he can do that, because he's turned into a proper luxury player in the course of his time at Reading. When he first came to the club, he was a very dynamic player. Kind of has a... Tari's Fauna has a little bit of a Jario in him, but he has a bit more kind of, you know, physicality and is a bit more of a, you know, a bit more of a bulldozer than a Jario in terms of his stature and stuff. But yeah, I just think that as a, if he can be a brilliant super sub at Jario and come on and change games, and obviously the way he toys with defence is then brilliant. But I don't see tactically or kind of any in many other respects why he gets back in this team now.
I quite agree. He is that luxury. He's the one. I think, yeah, he's got to come on. When he does eventually come on, if we're chasing the game, he's got to, in some ways, I think it's got to be a kick up the backside for him, because he hasn't produced for well over a season now. He's just seemed to have been kind of just strolling through game by game, picking up the appearances and not really doing much, it doesn't seem, certainly from a fan's perspective anyway. He's got to certainly work to get in that midfield three. Otherwise, yeah, he's not going to get a look in.
No, I agree. Jack Killick then, for the one question of the week, he's saying, given our slight tweak in formations in recent games, kind of from a 3-4-3 into a 3-5-2, should we prioritise signing another out-and-out central midfielder rather than an attacking midfielder like Amari Hutchinson, who's been linked as a young loanee from Chelsea? Jack says he agrees that after Naby Sarr comes in, a left back is priority, but I think we look light in central midfield. I suppose other than the three who are all loanees, it's probably worth adding, although I guess it doesn't make a huge amount of difference at the moment that our immediate trio in midfield are all loanees. But after that, you do kind of start picking young players or versatile kind of players who can drop in there. I mean, Ince and Ajaria can play in a midfield three. Sam Hutchinson can step up and probably do a job. But, I mean, yeah, it does feel like in the next week, Naby Sarr getting confirmed finally to play for Reading. Left-back Baba Rahman's being spoken about as someone who can just drop in from Chelsea. I wouldn't be mad about another central midfielder, because for me, it's just one of those positions that you almost can't have enough central midfielders. You almost are always going to need, with this particularly heavy championship schedule, you're always going to need fresh legs. You're always going to need players who can just drop in, give their all and everything. And maybe that's where Reading will. We've got one more lone player I think we can sign, whether that's going to be Rahman or someone. We even mentioned Danny Drinkwater at the top of the show. Someone like that, you wouldn't be... I probably would say it's the most important position after, you know, Sarr and the left-back is sorted. I would agree with Jack on that.
I think so. I think ultimately, as looking at the squad as it is, you could make a case for every single position, really, other than goalkeeper. I do quite agree, though. I mean, we do look a little bit light. If one of those players, one of those three that we've been lauding so far, is injured, then who steps in into that? You've got Ajaria to come back. But then, as you mentioned, Hutchinson could probably do a job there. Tom McIntyre, we know, has played there. And if I'm going to be brutally honest, I actually prefer him as a central midfielder, central defensive midfielder, rather than a centre-back. Certainly not a centre-back as a back two, well, back four, should I say. I prefer him as a back three, but, you know, he can play there. We need strength and depth all across the park, but, you know, we know we've got to be picky and choosy. You can argue the case, and, you know, you'd be hard pressed to disagree with it, really.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, you know, someone like Amari Hutchinson comes in. I guess if we are to play a 3-4-3, attacking midfielders, players like Hoylett, Ince, Ajaria, we have got players there, but maybe some more. I think ultimately Reading, aren't going to be one of those teams. And I suppose this is a really good, relaxing kind of relief thing to say, is that Reading aren't going to be one of those teams going into the deadline looking to sign four or five players, like, you know, a bit of a mad trolley dash, because firstly, we can't, the EFL won't allow it. And secondly, we have done some much earlier business this summer than we have in previous years. So the squad, far from complete. Certainly, I think we're going to have to accept our limitations in that. But yeah, I think it's a good point to be made about the central midfield being good, but not quite got the depth there yet. We'll see how the transfer window pans out in the last kind of week and a half. You can keep on top of all of that with the Tarlest End Twitter and the blog as per usual. We'll be going now into Pub Chat, where earlier on I spoke to Dave Evans of the Reading Community Trust to discuss what they do and how, you know, how big it is and everything like that. All the sorts of questions from people, fans of the club, who maybe don't know about the Community Trust. And I definitely recommend listening on and finding out a bit more about a part of the club that we can certainly be very proud of.
You're listening to the Tarhurst End podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome to Pub Chat. Yes, it's the part of the show that we're bringing back to the Tarhurst End podcast just to drop in and talk to some people who maybe we don't hear enough of around the club, maybe people who are doing things behind the scenes that we can now shine a light on for this kind of semi-regular feature that we're bringing back to the podcast. And joining me this week is Dave Evans of the Reading FC Community Trust. How's it going, Dave?
Yeah, good, thank you. And again, thanks for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. Well, I think the first thing that obviously a lot of people listening to this, even though they're Reading fans, might not know exactly what the Community Trust is, what they get up to. So why don't you give us an intro as to what you get up to at the Community Trust?
Well, the Community Trust is a charitable arm of the football club. So we are a registered charity, and we will run different activities throughout the weeks, from after school clubs at primary schools. We run a dementia cafe. We run a custody coach, where we've got a coach out of Maidenhead and Lower Early Police Station who will work with some first-time offenders. Actually, as they're in custody, we'll go in and speak to them about like different exit routes that we have. We have a RAP provision whereby we work with primary schools and secondary school children who are being semi-excluded or excluded from school, kids in care, looked after children, who will come to us who can't go to school for whatever reason, normally behavioural issues, and we'll work with them. So we'll see about 4,000 participants on a weekly basis throughout a normal week. So, yeah, it's pretty much 24-7 that we've got activities running. And throughout the summer, we've got lots of stuff going on as well. So it's full on.
Yeah, it does sound like a big operation, doesn't it? And what sort of things do you get up to with the people who come to the course? Is it all football? Is there kind of, obviously, there's talks and stuff like that as well?
Yeah, originally it was mostly football. So I've been doing the job for 27 years. I was at Wickham for 13 years. And when I started, it was mostly football. And it is still got a real football vibe to it. But we've got some money from the Premier League that we run like a primary star session. So we're in primary schools as like teaching assistants to help young boys and girls with their reading, literacy, numeracy and PE. And that's based around sport, obviously. But it's a great talent, ID talent for the football club as well. We have our development centres, advanced centres and elite centres. And quite a few of those children have gone through to play in the academy as well. So it's a good arm for the football club to recruit local talented young boys and girls as well, because we've got a talent hub, a regional talent hub for the girls as well, called the Emerging Talent Hub. So we're there on the ground floor looking for players, but it's also about outcomes for young people. So even if they just like football or like sports, we run a big 16 to 19 education program with Reading College. So in September, we'll have nearly 90 students there, with 12 of them being an SEND background, special education needs. So it's to engage with young people. It's to talent to try and recruit talented young individuals, but also really to try and work with different community groups and different young people, especially getting themselves into a little bit of trouble, to be able to show them like a positive pathway.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. It's interesting as well. I had no idea that there was actually a kind of like football club element to it, in the sense of like looking for talented players. Obviously, a lot of players, throughout football have always come through, kind of disadvantaged backgrounds, or maybe haven't had the best start in life, that maybe get picked up by the sort of things that you're talking about. I suppose, does it add to the satisfaction of the role as well, when you obviously see on a kind of smaller level, perhaps the or more of a micro level, the individuals that just enjoy coming to the sessions and benefit from it, but then also on a kind of macro, larger level, you see even the club benefiting from it, maybe a player coming through to the academy, maybe even the first team?
Well, Tom Mack used to play for me at a grassroots level. So Tom Mack came right the way through. Dan Tetic's another one. Tom Holmes, obviously a local boy. So a lot of these have been on camps and then come through. So you identify them at a young age. And but also we have a lot of young people who work for us full time now. So they've got, maybe they've got a slight something like, autism. So they might have autism. They might have a slight disorder they've got, which has stopped them from achieving stuff. So they come and work for us, and they're actually full-time or part-time employment with the trust, working with some disadvantaged children. And because they've been through that experience themselves, they can communicate and they understand what it's like. So yes, the football side is great, and to have people come through to the first team and the women's team. But what's just as rewarding is, you know, if I say changing lives, I mean changing lives, that we actually can change people's lives and have a positive effect, which is massive.
Yeah, absolutely. How big is the team then that runs the trust and everything? As obviously yourself, who I understand is full-time, is there volunteers and people like that as well?
We've got 28 full-time staff, and we've probably got about 60 what we'd call casual part-time staff. And they work in different, like soccer schools this week, so it's mostly coaches out there doing soccer schools. But we've also got some looked after children that we work with. So it's a slightly different, you know, category of coach that would work with those kind of children that would go and do a soccer school. So normally the soccer schools are your level ones, your level twos, your level three coaches. Your ones looked after children might be youth club level one, youth club level two qualified coaches who can work with children in like a more of a social aspect rather than a football aspect. So, we're a big team. We're a big team, big scheme. It's a bit of a secret. So we want to try and get this myth out of being the biggest secret Reading Football Club have got. Because most people like me, I played local football, semi-professional football. So everyone wants to watch the football side. But I think it's something for the supporters to be really proud about also. Because if you lose 4-0, like a Rotherham performance, for instance, you can always come away feeling rejected, but also knowing that your football club does an awful lot in the local community, which makes you feel proud.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. I think as well, one of the questions I wanted to ask is kind of, I think you alluded to it earlier about the funding of the trust, because obviously Reading, you know, we all know about the financial issues, we all know about the EFL, all that sort of stuff. How does it come for you guys as well? Is it kind of does it come from the owner and stuff like that? Does it come from separate bodies or the government?
Yeah, no, we're financially free from the football club. So we get funding from the Premier League. We get funding from the EFL. So for us, it's PLCF, Premier League Community Fund, and EFLT, which is the English Football League Trust. So we'll get like Primary Stars, Kicks. We do Primary Stars and Spires now when we go to secondary schools. All that is funded by the Premier League. And then we also get some money from the EFL as well. We get core funding from both people as well. And then, so you've got three-thirds of fund. You've got the funding aspect. You've got the fees aspect. So after-school club centres, soccer school, people actually pay for it. There's a fee side coming in. And then what we've got is service level agreements. So we work with the council. We work with the colleges to deliver a service where they pay us to do that. So there's three main sections of funding that we receive. And our turnover is about 1.4 million each year now. So you can imagine it's quite a big scheme, but our expenses are quite high as well. So we have a small surplus that we have. But it's in collaboration with Premier League, Football League, but also lots of local partners, Thames Valley Police, Woking District Council, Reading Borough Council, all different partners as well.
Oh, fantastic. So final couple of questions then, because I know you're a busy man. There's a lot to give you getting on with as you've kind of shown us today. If people wanted to get involved in terms of, you know, joining as maybe a coach or something like that, vacancies, is there kind of a lot of opportunities to get involved with stuff like that?
Yeah, we have a constant recruitment on the website. So if anybody go on the website, have a look, and you just get in, come, you know, put an application in. Normally, if you're level one, level two qualified, better, because that comes under our insurance to, for people to come and coach, and then we can interview you and then go from there.
Lovely. And last question then is that if you have, you know, kids, obviously, particularly from obviously all backgrounds who want to get involved, or if you know someone who might benefit, what's the best way of getting involved in the trust and actually getting people into sessions?
So if you contact community@redandfc.co.uk, okay, then that will be straight an email that comes through to the trust. We can pick up on that email, or you can give us a ring here. It can speak to us. We've got a Twitter as well. We've got Facebook accounts. So you can always communicate via that way, or contact me direct, dEvans@redandfc.co.uk. You can contact me direct and I can put you through. Hopefully, wherever your child is, whether it's a, you know, really talented footballer, whether it's from a disadvantaged background, whatever it might be, we do a lot of stuff with disabled young people as well. So hopefully we've got a, you know, we've got an activity or session for you.
Well, it sounds, I think I do agree with you. It sounds like something that, I mean, I came into this interview having been connected by Ben Thomas from the podcast, and I didn't know too much about the Community Trust myself, but it's been very enlightening talking to you. And I think I do very much agree with you that it is something that the fans can be proud of and just know a little bit more about, because I know that people who benefit from these sessions will absolutely talk them up. But people like me who, you know, don't have kids or don't get involved in them, don't know too much about them, it's certainly something that we can be more aware of and certainly feel more proud of. So Dave, thank you very much for coming on to the podcast today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Cheers, Mark. Thank you. Take care.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Right, welcome back to the show and big match preview time to round off this episode of the Tireless Den podcast. It is Millwall away on Saturday, classic 3 p.m. trip to Millwall, very championship feel to that, isn't it, handbags? We have had one win in seven meetings with Millwall. February 2014 was our last win at the new Den, and it feels like we've had a couple of games this season already. You know, Blackpool away is kind of one of them. Rotherham, I can't think of many good results we've got there. Just off the top of my head, thinking about good results we've got at Millwall, really, really so few come to mind.
Certainly recently, you mentioned that one in 2014. That was a nice, comfortable 3-0 win. And we had a reasonable record there for a few years, but it's all kind of gone a little bit off the rails. Over the last 2 years, it's Millwall. They play a particular way. Gary Rowett is a classic Millwall manager. They play a direct and organised and rugged style of football that their fans, you know, totally buy into. It's going to be a totally different kettle of fish to our most recent pair of games. It's going to be more aligned to Rotherham, who, as Pauline said, we were bullied. We can't be bullied at Millwall because we will be lambs to the slaughter. Hopefully we've learned a hell of a lot from that game and we can come away with yet another positive result.
Absolutely. The Millwall so far, they're looking all right. I mean, they're not kind of flying. They're not really doing badly. Bit of a leaky defence, but their attackers look good. Are we, you know, on that sense, is this game a bit of a toss-up in terms of who's going to win it? Is it actually very even going into it? Or are we maybe bigger underdogs than we kind of realise? Are we maybe going into this game with a bit of a sense of ourselves being better than we are? Because we've had Fortress Medeski, or Fortress SCLS, if you want to call it, this season, away from home, not being quite so good. So that does leave us perhaps a bit vulnerable, particularly as fans, to kind of overconfidence into this game.
A little bit. I mean, we've got to recognise that Millwall, they literally have a never-say-die attitude. I mean, you look at two of their most recent results, a 3-2 win against Coventry when they were 2-0 down, and their 2-2 draw at Swansea when they were 2-0 down going into injury time. All right, Swansea shot themselves in the foot with two own goals, but, you know, Millwall... They're a strong side. They're a strong championship outfit. It's not going to be an easy game. And are we perhaps overconfident? Well, I mean, something we mentioned, it's early days. We don't really know. We haven't really sort of settled into a pattern of how we're going to play. We're not going, you know, how we're going to do. I wouldn't be surprised if we came away with a sneaky 1-0 win, but equally, I would also wouldn't be surprised if we came away with, you know, a tragic 3-0 defeat, as we've seen so many times over the last few seasons when we go on a little bit of a run and it all comes crashing down. I hope, obviously, that's not the case. You know, I don't want to see that, but, you know, false dawns have been aplenty over the last few seasons. So who knows?
Yeah, the only thing I would add on to that is that if Reading do lose this game, the last two home wins should really mean that. I mean, I don't really like go in for the whole Twitter reactions to games and all that sort of stuff, but fans reacting to a potential defeat this weekend should, unless it is hideous, like an Epsis is absolutely horrendous, should be kind of muted and should be pretty calm, which is always a better thing for the kind of atmosphere around the fans as well. Let's talk predictions then.
We will have a good following there. I mean, we're sold out. I mean, for the first time ever, we've been given the lower tier there, and we've sold it out. So that'll be interesting, to say the least. I don't think we get the whole of it. I think they keep a block either side clear for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it's over 1,000, isn't it? Because I think it's the lower tier with one block of the upper tier has now been released.
Okay, yeah. So it'll be a good following, whatever.
Yeah, definitely, which is good, and certainly not what we've seen at Millwall much in the last few seasons for Reading. But yeah, let's talk predictions then. And you know, the Tireless Den podcast prides itself on having you know, Reading experts in amongst the stands, by fans, for fans, and all that. And you know, as obviously we know the team arguably as well as anyone can really claim as a collective. Wouldn't necessarily say that about, you know, myself individually, but as a collective, I'd always talk up our expertise on Reading Football Club. And 7 Reading fans in the Tireless Den Prediction League over the first 5 games of the season, we have had 2 people predict 1 result, and that is it. Everything else we've got wrong so far this season. Adam predicted a defeat at Rotherham. Sim predicted we would beat Blackburn. Everything else we have got wrong. So I won't go through the league table because it will embarrass myself.
I feel a little bit better about myself, to be fair.
It does. It's nice to know you're not the only one, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we all started quite positively and we've clearly been stung by that and now we've gone to negative. So I think we'll get a good array of results predicted for the Millwall game. I'm going to throw in a 1-1 because I think the championship is a bit draw heavy so far this stage of the season. Reading and Millwall, neither team has kind of been amazing or terrible in, you know, the whole sense of the first 5 games. So I'm going to go 1-1. What do you reckon, Handbags?
This is difficult because we know how Millwall set up. They're a big side as well. You know, they're going to tower over a lot of our players. Can you imagine Jake Cooper up against Tom McIntyre, for example, at set pieces? They do well a lot of the time with set pieces. I'm going, so they'll cause us problems, but I'm going to go for a sneaky 2-1 win.
I would certainly accept that. I will make sure we get the rest of the predictions for the Millwall game. And as I say, hopefully, I mean, something's got to go better, hasn't it, than 2 out of 2 scores for 5 games out for 7 people. That's worse than guessing, isn't it, really? So, yeah, we'll get that. Get the predictions in. We'll probably put those online, as we've been doing this season, as well on the Twitter. You can also follow all the build-up to the game and everything on the Tireless Den blog. We will be back after the Millwall game, before the Sheffield United game, which is a week tomorrow as we record this. And then, yeah, we'll see how we get on for probably one of the more intriguing games of the season that Reading are going to play, given the week's activity so far. Thank you, as ever, Handbags, for coming on. Nice to get a season debut out of you.
Absolute pleasure. No problem at all. And if anybody fancies coming up to Abingdon United, then I'll be there tomorrow night at for the Barks and Bucks. I think it's the first round game against my local long league team, Sheringham.
Oh, well, the Barks and Bucks Cup's owned by Reading, I believe, isn't it? So
at the moment, yes, absolutely.
Hopefully, I presume we'll be back in that later this year. I don't think Category 1 status is really going to affect our participation against the likes of Ascot and Marlow.
I hope so, because you know, there's a lot of non-league clubs in the local area that, and you know, Reading generally, you know, they take a few hundred to these non-league grounds, and it's a little bit of a financial fillip. So hopefully Shrivenham will do well, and we'll get a few Reading fans in the local pubs here. That'll be nice for the Swindon fans around us.
definitely. So yeah, we'll be back in a week's time then. Thank you as always for listening. Let's go to the Lions Den and see if we can keep this run going. Come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it's